This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Dunavant is a family-owned business that has the knowledge to ensure global and domestic shipping practices are efficient and effective. Dunavant generates supply chain proficiency with outstanding, attentive, and expedient customer service. For more information, visit dunavant.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics, the FreightWaves podcast highlighting founders doing it the way that doesn't get a lot of attention. We're here to change that and grow the small business community in our industry by sharing their stories and inspiring others to take the leap. I'm your host, Nate Schutz. Let's build something together from the ground up. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We've had another exciting few weeks on the show here. Our network of founders continues to multiply, not just one person at a time, but multiple founders at a time are finding their voice and getting their brands and their companies out into the world. And we're honored and privileged that they are choosing the Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics platform to share their stories and talk about the difficult and exciting life of entrepreneurship in the logistics world. This week, I am excited to introduce a new guest to the show coming to us from Atlanta, Matt Fain, the co-founder at Pop Capacity. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for agreeing to do this. I know you've got an exciting story and I can't wait to hear more about it. Why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and Pop Capacity?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I got started in supply chain logistic management in 2011, cut my teeth in the third-party logistics world, truckload brokering. From there, I tried to conquer the world's on-time deliveries and OS&Ds by starting an asset-based trucking company. When I say asset-based, I don't mean 53-foot dry vans and reefers. We were running sprinters and box trucks. But we were having a really good time doing it. We were able to make some really good commitments because the most frustrating thing and a part of being a broker in transportation is that lack of communication, like that lack of control. Commit a guaranteed service to your client, and then that delivery driver misses that window. Our main objective was to offer a true guaranteed service and do it in this really relatable fashion. We understand that, you know, in logistics specifically, relationships are key, right? And I think we spoke about this a little bit before on our previous call, but like, I love technology. I love automation, robotics, the digital movement happening, but the power of the relationship is champion in all those. So we built that transportation, asset-based transportation company based on that. It was so funny. On my way to Nashville, Tennessee, doing a hotshot load, and I got a call from one of our existing clients looking to procure warehouse space. And that's kind of where our story began with Pop Capacity. It was, at first, we did not want to take that challenge. We weren't a warehousing brokerage. We didn't know anything about warehouse capacity or space or service providers or whatnot, other than the docks that we touched during transportation, right? But we were also a startup too. So revenues and cash flow was top of mind. So our co-founder and I, who's actually the co-founder of Pop Capacity, decided to, you know, take that challenge on, see if we could self-procure warehouse space. And we did. And it was a really, really big challenge. And that was kind of the birth of Pop Capacity.
What made finding warehouse capacity so difficult?
I mean, naturally, you think, where do you go to search something, right? My daughter says, search it up. So where do you go to search it up? You go to Google. Unfortunately, Google now in the warehousing space, you won't find an asset-based warehouse owner, right? Ad space has been bought by larger enterprises, venture-backed startups, whatever it may be, that ad space is gone. And you click on it thinking that you're engaging with the warehouse and finding out that it's a technology you don't need or a 4PL or a broker or a real estate company or whatever it may be. Second page, six lines down, you finally find a warehouse. You read about them. They seem like a good fit, but they don't have space. There's one phone call. You find another one. You couldn't get a hold of him. You left an email. He emailed you back. They focus on hazmat. Well, you got a food grade product. That doesn't work. So as we started fielding and going through all these really manual processes to find, look, the reality is I love warehousing, but there's nothing sexy about it. It's four walls, dock doors, material handling equipment. Sometimes you've got robotics and automation inside that makes it more technological, but the reality is it's a very simple asset. And why was it so challenging to find the information on that facility or on that warehouse? And that's where it kind of began, like that challenge of finding somewhere and the natural solution is Google and Google not working. I mean, you think about in the vacation rental world, we will never go to Google and type in Atlanta, Georgia vacation rentals, right? And if you do, you're going to find a marketplace that has aggregated all the solutions in that industry and is able to tell you exactly what you're looking for. Four bedroom, three bath, private yard, and I can bring my dog. It didn't exist in the world of warehousing. We sought to fix that.
So let me ask a clarifying question then. One route would be to be a straight up service provider and control your own asset, you know, get real estate, operate it yourself. Another would be sort of the 3PL route where you're going out and getting capacity and then reselling it to others. And then the third option is this platform model. How does the platform model differ from the other two?
I mean, from a capital, I mean, you look from a financial standpoint, right? We didn't have to really exhaust any capital into acquiring a lease, going and building brick and mortar. I'm not a 3PL warehouse operator. I've never picked and packed a box. I've never unloaded a truck. Well, I say that. I have unloaded a truck. We don't understand the inner nuances of a fulfillment company. There are people who have mastered that craft. Our main objective was to find and identify who those people were and give them a digital platform to showcase their services in space and not reinvent the wheel, right? Much like in truckload brokerage, if you look at Uber Freight and Convoys all the world, they didn't go out and buy tractor trailers and offer dedicated capacity. They went out and made some really good relationships with the existing capacity there and then put some technology behind it to add visibility to what was existing and when they were available. In the world of freight, or anyway, hear me mention freight a lot. That's just the world that I came from. But in the world of freight and logistics, it's called digital freight matching, right? You're doing origin destination pairing. You're making sure that that tractor trailer is never empty, either on a head haul or a back haul or a line haul, whatever it may be. You're making sure that they're always full during the time that they can operate. Very similar to what we're doing here in this digital space matching. Identifying the ebbs and flows, the seasonality of a business and a customer, and aligning that with their perfect fit based on commodities, space, services offered, seasonalities, rates, obviously. But yeah, it's just been this really good little change. And we chose to kind of go the marketplace route just because people have already done this. And we weren't going to reinvent the wheel and telling everybody that we're better than a 3PL. We're not. There are a few folks out there that specialize in this, and we want to give them the platform to showcase what they do.
One of the unique challenges of building a platform is you have to get participants into the platform in order for the platform to grow. So there is this chicken and the egg proposition of, do I go out and find demand first and then seek capacity to meet that demand? Or do I go out and build a bunch of capacity with no revenue to offer them and then go and find customers? Which angle did you go?
We went capacity first. So it was like that build it and they will come method, you know, wasn't very kind on our pocketbook either, right? We do charge a subscription base to our suppliers and to our partners in the marketplace, which is very minimal. And that's what really helped us get to the point we are now. But it was definitely for 18 months, heads down, calling all the best suppliers in every market and asking them a series of questions, getting them to fill out a profile form within our marketplace and really pitching them this idea of, there is a better way to find and identify opportunities, right? How many times have you gotten an opportunity that's a hazmat class 2 and you're a food grade warehouse, but yet you got all the way into a site tour and they dumped on you that there's this one hazmat SKU that they have? Well, you wasted a ton of time. All that information can be captured within a marketplace. You could have reviewed it. And what if I told you that there's some AI that can route and map the right opportunities based on the way your profile was built? Now you know when you're reviewing those opportunities that they are real and they are fit within that wheelhouse. You don't have to waste any time on stuff that doesn't make sense anymore.
So you started on this journey through freight and then came into an opportunity where somebody had demand and you went out and found the capacity. So that sounds like that was your first customer. How did you find your second customer?
A referral from the first customer. Which is always a really good thing, right? Did a good job and someone wanted to talk about it. So we'll actually talk about the third customer. The third customer was very organic, was us outbound calling in an area that we knew we had capacity. You know, this area just so happened to be Dallas, Texas, DFW market. We had a lot of outstanding capacity partners there that adopted the technology really quick, right? Wanted to get in the marketplace and start reviewing opportunities as fast as they could. So that was our first market. So we obviously did a lot of outreach for that market. And it was a smaller customer. It wasn't, you know, we started off this one customer that brought us to this industry, a large, very large global supply chain and tech company. It wasn't quite that big. It gave us an opportunity to see how our marketplace was going to work with a smaller type customer. This customer did fidgety poppets. I don't know if you have kids. These little silicone poppets that you kind of fidget with. Imagine like a to-go cup with the little pops that tell you Dr. Pepper or Diet or Coke. It's like that, but they just fidget and pop it in and out. I'd seen my kids with them for months. They'd been wanting to buy these poppets at the stores and all this, and we get a request, randomly called a toy distributor, and they just so happen to have some containers coming in with these poppets. But it wasn't a lot. We're talking 4 or 5 pallets, 20,000 units, a very small opportunity for a 3PL. But the way that we were able to get that opportunity through him digitally, he didn't need to spend a lot of time reviewing a scope of work and commodities and SKUs and throughputs. It was all lived right there. They were able to fire back a rate with some minimums, and that was onboarded within, I think it was 6.5 days of us making that initial call. And that's when we knew that, look, it can work for SMBs and it can work for large enterprises, right? This is a very agnostic type platform.
So you built out the technology, but you're not exactly a technologist by training, are you?
Absolutely not. I'm a supply chain guy. So who understands some of the buzzwords in technology?
Okay. So who built the technology then?
So we partnered with our CTO now, Kiribo Jerma. He worked down here in Atlanta Tech Village for a long time. He was working on a marketplace that used and leveraged virtual touring technology for the construction industry. So basically like a CRM for contractors to understand and visually see when the painters were done painting, when the sheetrockers were done sheetrocking. And you could align and figure out if you're on track. Is this project going to be able to close? Are you going to get your CO or whatnot? And I was introduced to him through a childhood friend, kind of mentioning this idea of this digital marketplace for warehouse space. He's like, oh man, you need to talk to Caribel. Had a few really high level conversations with him to figure out his background, what he did in the past. Not that I really understood, right? I mean, he was an engineer and did a lot of coding, and I didn't know whether it was good or bad what he was telling me, but I knew and understood that he had built something similar using some virtual touring technology, and it felt natural. Within the first or second conversation, he was already firing me off emails about supply chain and ways that he thinks that our marketplace can impact it in other areas, which are on our roadmap and will be announced here pretty soon. But it was a really good connection at a really great time. We had Derek and I, who's our co-founder, had all these visions about what it looked like, what it felt like, how you entered stuff. And then, you know, you look at a whiteboard, you're like, yeah, but how do we make that come to life? It was amazing how it came to, right? Just a casual conversation with a friend mentioning it to, hey, look, you need to talk to this guy about building that. That could be really cool. And we've been together ever since.
It sounds very similar to starting a band. I use this analogy sometimes that you can have the best idea, but you've got 3 guys that want to play lead guitar and it doesn't work. You need these complementary skill sets and experiences and perspectives in order to create something new that attracts an audience. So you mentioned, you know, one of these co-founders you discovered through sharing your idea with others. There's an angle that some people, I think, falsely rely on that controls their narrative. And it says, I'm not going to tell anybody about my idea until it's fully baked and ready to sell and go hit the market because I'm afraid someone's going to steal my idea. I don't know what the stats are, but I'd say 90% of those businesses never get off the ground because the fear of intellectual property prevents them from ever making any progress, where what really wins the day is execution. So how did you know when it was the right time to kind of emerge from stealth mode into, we're going to go put this in front of the world?
I mean, we're still kind of flying in stealth mode. I mean, we just kind of turned on the marketing spigot, right? You really don't know about Pop Capacity unless, you know, you're within our network or if you follow me on LinkedIn or whatnot, right? We haven't done any heavy SEO and marketing to be that number one Google ad on the warehouse search. The timing told ourselves, right? The pandemic happened. Now we understood that everybody was at home, but supply chain was the one industry that kept rolling and kept moving. There were companies in Seattle that needed warehouse space in Atlanta, Georgia. The only difference is they weren't getting on a plane right now. So we kind of knew that, okay, we need a virtual digital way to procure, for folks to procure this important capacity and allow the supply chain to continue moving, eliminate some of the bottlenecks. That was when we were like, okay, we got to fast pace and get our MVP out to market as quickly as possible. So right around the pandemic, I think the pandemic was March of 20, right? We had our MVP launched October of 20 with doing some kind of manual processes and generating a little bit of revenue behind the scenes before the MVP launched. So it was really the pandemic. I mean, I can truly blame that because we just saw, okay, it was really challenging finding warehouse space prior to. And now one hit and you're not jumping on a plane and flying across country to go review and vet warehouses. You're kind of going into it blind at this point. Like I've heard suppliers pre-pop capacity saying that I used to get on an iPhone. When a customer's competitor product used to come on, I'd black it out and move to the next building. And the shipper would be like, well, what was that? Hold on, go backwards. It was this very not so good feeling, right? Not to mention the picture quality was horrible, the sound quality was horrible, and you only got to see what they wanted you to see from a shipper's perspective. Now we're giving you visibility into what they're saying they are, right? A fulfillment company with 200,000 square foot, a pick wall, and robots. Now you can go into the virtual tour and actually see everything that they said they were. You can visualize it and see it and see how it applies to your business.
Let's go a little deeper then. Now that we have established some of Pop Capacity's history and the model that you're going after, let's go into the founder journey a little bit more and talk about specifically bootstrapping this. What so far have you found to be the best parts about choosing to go bootstrapped rather than take outside money?
Something about the passion, right? I mean, you come into starting something with a goal to achieve and knowing that when you take in large sums of money, you do give away a bit of your baby, if you would. Then the earlier stage you are, the more of that you give up. I love our friends that have gone and raised hundreds of millions of dollars and gained awareness to this really important industry, right? They gave me the opportunity to showcase some of the other areas that we can help influence the warehousing industry, right? But the timing it wasn't good for us. We've been approached by several investors. We've had some acquisition attempts happen. We haven't made the impact we want to.
So what does that picture in your mind of impact look like?
It's the industry standard, right? If you go on LinkedIn or if you go on, I guess primarily LinkedIn, and you start looking at some of the questions that are asked from shippers. Hey, do you have warehouse space in San Francisco? Looking for this, this, and this. Hey, we have warehouse space in New Jersey, 200,000 square foot, just opened up. Talk to me. That should be digitized, right? There should be a marketplace that you can go to and us be the industry standard for self-procuring capacity. Really influencing the industry and having everybody understand that trying to get all the capacity under one roof, right? So getting all the capacity under one roof and then it be the industry standard to not Google it, not call a friend, not randomly call warehouses that you go to one source and it has all the information there. That is the end goal.
It's easy to forget in this neat stage that we're in as an industry of all the exciting developments in tech that is emerging, just how fragmented still the industry is across every segment within it. Legacy systems or no systems at all are still so commonplace where it feels to me like it's 1999 in the logistics world compared to the internet boom of the late 90s. Do you feel that excitement now?
Yes, there's a ton of buzz around it, right? I think I spoke to someone on another podcast. Supply chain right now, you can look at any node within it and there's some sort of technology, whether it be dock scheduling or warehousing procurement or inventory management, optimization, right? There's a little bit of technology sprinkled on all of it. So it is very exciting being in it, but there's also minutia, if you would. And I think after, this wave subsides, because we'll see some stabilization in the supply chain. Once everybody redesigns their network and they're doing micro fulfillment and have all their just in case inventory levels set up, we'll see some stabilization. We'll find that some of the new fancy, shiny technologies didn't add enough value to stick. But I still think the industry as a whole will be much, much better after, we go through this digital movement.
It's a cool time. And I know it's starting to hit the mainstream level when my 14-year-old son, Henrik, I heard him bragging to his friends, like, my dad works in logistics. Now, that would have been a punchline 20 years ago. And now it is somehow street cred with teenagers. So that's, and there's TikTok being made around logistics, you know, concepts. And so maybe that's the sign that we have fully, you know, hit the mainstream and we've arrived.
That's right. We're in the limelight now. People still don't understand fully what's underneath the hood and what really makes it tick. They know at a high level how things get there now and what a bottleneck would do, what a hiccup or a hurdle does, what it does to our economy, right? And what it does to the buyers.
So we've talked about some of the exciting parts. Let's go the opposite end. What are your least favorite things to spend time on at work?
Well, I mean, we're a lean team of five, so we literally are wearing every single hat under the sun, you know? The hardest part right now is kind of transitioning from this very wild, wild west, right? Not any standardized SOPs, not any standardized structure. It was a very get it done mentality. And it still is, but as we're scaling and bringing more team members on, we have to start forming the foundation that'll allow us to scale faster and not as wild, wild west. And that seemed to be pretty challenging, right? Because we all, you know, everybody thinks that it is easy to manage people and personalities and like you just kind of tell them what to do and they'll do it. Well, that's not the case, right? If you want things to get done, then you have to be a leader. You don't need to be a dictator. As a small business and entrepreneur, you're only led by you and your co-founder for a long time. And as you start bringing on heads and different personalities, you start understanding that ways that you work with certain people, your co-founder, is not the way that you have to interact with these new people. Sometimes you need to paint a different picture of what your dream is. And I think that is really the most challenging part, is just kind of taking a very scrappy startup into an actual business that can scale and create the impact that we want to create.
What have you learned about yourself in this process that's maybe been a surprise to you?
Oh gosh, which one? There's a thousand different things. My ability to listen was a little bit better than I thought it was, right? For the longest time, especially being a very, I'm not gonna say aggressive sales guy, but a very type A type salesperson, right? I always controlled the conversation. I always wanted to make my presence known in the form of thought leadership and this, that, and the other. But getting into POP, like, and sitting back and listening to what people, because during the beginning of it, we had to ask people if this would work. We had to ask people if they would, you know, put their stamp of approval on this new solution. And then what kind of pricing would you be willing to pay? It took a lot of listening. So I think that I learned that, you know, my ability to listen was a little bit better than I thought.
Well, let's go even earlier then. What were you like as a kid?
A leader, you know, trying to lead and be the person that people followed, right? I was very entrepreneur minded. You know, I was a kid in the commons area peddling, you know, the 25 cent pack of gum that I bought at the gas station. I was selling each individual piece for 50 cents, right? So I always had that kind of hustler and grind, which is the personality. Super competitive, but I was only really good at one thing, and that was swimming. I swam state and national levels. But even at sports, I wasn't good at. I was very competitive, and I was wanting to beat you at it, knowing that I never would, right? 5'8 Asian guy, but I loved basketball. It didn't really go hand in hand. But I tell you, I'd get on the court, and I'd play my heart out trying to win. So just very competitive, you know, also very humble, too. Right? That's something that my parents instilled in me. You could be the best at anything, but you don't need to tell people about it. People just need to see it. Much like in this business, right? We're not telling a lot of people about it. We didn't need to. The value itself created the awareness. Now we're going to sprinkle a little bit more awareness and accelerate it a little bit. But yeah, I guess that was me as a kid.
Would you say that your parents are proud of what you're doing right now?
They knew who I was before I knew who I was. I was in corporate America. I was a high-level sales guy. I enjoyed it. I loved it. That's where I fell into the art of sales, was in corporate America and construction materials and building materials. But they always knew that I was that kid in the Collins area. You know, my mom knew. I told her, hey, pull in the gas station. I want to take my allowance money. I want to go buy some candy so I can make 10 times what I have before. She saw that in me. So, you know, and this wasn't the first startup. You know, I mean, I did started in the logistics field. That was a franchise, and then started the asset-based trucking. But this is the first time that I thought from a national level, from a global level, this company can make a really, really big impact. It's exciting. I hope they're proud of me. The reason why I'm doing it is everything they instilled in me. So
you've had a lot of success. Let's maybe talk about some of the failures. What have you learned?
I mean, the biggest thing is that in general, not always flowers and rainbows. It's how you deal with certain situations and how you persevere through those situations, especially coming from the transportation side, right? There are so many issues that happen during that venture. And if you're a broker, guess what? You can't control any of those. You have to own it. So I've learned to have thicker skin. And all that was done because of moments that I failed, moments that I didn't have that thick skin. And I reacted in a certain way, right? That truckload driver didn't pick up. And I was going to let him know I was unhappy that he didn't pick up. Well, guess what? I just lost a great carrier. And you know what? He had a flat tire. And that's why he didn't pick up. But I didn't listen long enough to hear that, right? I just immediately went into why you didn't do that service for me. Learning how to react, you know, through those failures, the foundational stuff, right? The building it. That was another thing that I just thought that everybody kind of understood how it should work and how it should flow and function and what our solution was. That's not the case. No one else lives in Matt Fain and Derek Loft's head to understand what the value we perceive to be. You have to tell them that. So assuming that people understood what your vivid vision was, right? I'm reading a book right now by Cameron Harold, like, and it's about all that. It's about painting this picture to people that aren't you, people that don't share that same motivation, that same passion, because you built it from the ground up. You can, and it's just the way that you present to them and the way that you interact and speak to them and bring them on that journey. Holly, there's so many. I could go on. We could go on for 2.5 hours about everything I failed at in the past 24 months.
It's one of the unexpected benefits of entrepreneurship that you can't get in a classroom. There is no curriculum that's going to explain every step that you're going to take. And it is fertile ground for learning, obviously, you know, in a business sense, but really deeply on a personal sense also, because one day you're going to be, you know, making payroll and somebody's unhappy with their compensation. You have to learn how to navigate a potentially difficult conversation with somebody that you really depend on in your business and that you need, and yet they may not be happy or see the same future that you do. And on the flip side, you may have wild success selling and not necessarily be prepared to execute on it because your back of house operations isn't yet built. And you've got to learn to be comfortable going to bed every night knowing that there are small fires burning everywhere.
Everywhere, every single day. My wife asked me all the time, well, what didn't you get done today? I was like, which one, right? The thing from 4 days ago is what I didn't get done, right? But you just have to prioritize, knowing that you can't conquer all the day's tasks in one day. Know the stuff that you have to get done and stuff that can wait. And yeah, trust me. I mean, I stress myself out every day looking at my, because I'm kind of old school. I still write a good old fashioned to-do list. Every evening before I close the laptop, I have my paper to-do list on my desk. And then every morning I start off with that to-do list. It's grown over time, right? But you got to start prioritizing it and figuring out what's important, what you can allow someone else to do. Starting a company and owning a business is not easy, and you can't do it on your own.
So who do you go to in the hard moments? Inside or outside of your team, just you as an individual?
Oh, I mean, my wife. I go to her for everything. Like, she lived this journey too. When you decide to quit your 9-to-5 and a stable income, great insurance, and decide to go into the startup environment and bootstrap a startup, you've got to get blessings from your family, right? The people that you're doing it for, because it does impact them too. It was weeks, months of talking to her about the dream and about the idea I had and how, you know, from a financial standpoint, this is how we can make it happen, but we're going to have to make these sacrifices here, right? And now I've got 2 young kids. I got a 6 and a 9-year-old. So, you know, leaving that stability was definitely, you know, something I thought about. It kept me up at night. But also knowing that I wasn't going to be happy until I did it kept me up at night as well. It's my wife. She is my soundboard. She's the person that I go to when I just cannot think about anything anymore and need some word of advice from a non-industry person. And then from a business standpoint, it's our co-founder, Derek Loftus. I mean, we probably speak just as much as my wife and I, maybe a little bit more at times. But from a business standpoint, I mean, he's the guy that we share the good, the bad, the ugly. Like I said, not everything is flowers and rainbows in the startup world. very little of it is until a certain point of time. But he was a person that, you know, the wild ideas, the things that I knew were going to be detrimental to the company if we continue to do it this way, like, he's the guy that I speak to about that.
Well, I'm glad that you've got support around you. It can be an isolating place, especially first-time founders. It's sometimes great to have a group of co-founders to not be doing it all yourself. There's simply so much psychological and emotional burden that goes along with bringing and birthing something into the world that, you know, sharing that load across a group of co-founders has proven time and time again to be the right answer for a lot of companies. It's not for everybody, but it can be an answer for the right mix of folks. And it sounds like you've found that. Matt, where can people find out more about you and Pop Capacity?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can always go to our website, www.popcapacity.com. Follow me on LinkedIn, Matt Fain Lightbulb. That would be me. And then you can always reach out to me directly, matt@popcapacity.com. And that's it. Pretty easy to get a hold of me right now. I don't know if that'll be the case in the next few months. We've seen a lot of crazy growth, so I'm getting spread a lot of different ways, but always look to have a really good conversation.
We wish you nothing but success and growth and support on your journey. Thank you so much for being here today. Listeners, please go ahead and subscribe to the show. You can also join the conversation online. I'm at LogisticsTwit on Twitter. Of course, you can find us on LinkedIn, at FreightWaves.com, and on FreightCasts. Matt, keep up the good work. We are all rooting for you.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another founder share their story on the Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics. If you'd like to become part of the story yourself, please subscribe to our show and leave a review. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.